Now let's go to our first speaker, Donald Hill. Don is an anthropologist and a scholar in Caribbean affairs with his expertise is on the English-speaking Caribbean. He's written books on the culture of music of the Southern Caribbean, and he has many articles in popular magazines. His book is on display out front. He is professor of anthropology and Africana Latino studies at SUNY Oneonta. This happens to be Don's first ARSCA meeting, and he is a new member. So let's welcome Don and hear about commercial recordings, Hecho en Cuba, made in Cuba.
I've got a playlist here.
I'll hand it out.
I've also have a formal paper which I've written, and if some of you would like a copy, I can give you copies after the session. I also want to preface this with the fact that a lot of the fundamental research on for this paper is not mine. It's Cristobal Diaz's research, and he was planning to be here, but he isn't here today, couldn't make it. In addition to Diaz's new book on discography of early Cuban music to 1925, the acoustical period, quite a few of the references are from Dick Spotswood's ethnographic work, the volume on Spanish music. So I don't have those references listed on the play sheet where I got the information from, but the references are in the paper. Now, I'm not going to be able to read my paper. I timed it, and it takes an hour, and then the music that I selected, just my favorite records, take two hours, right? So I have 12 minutes of music and whatever talk I can cram in about 7 minutes. So what I'm trying to do is to try to show the relationship between the various forms of traditional music in Cuba, particularly African music, and to a lesser extent the Spanish music, which I know less about, the relationship between those forms of traditional music and Cuban popular music as it was recorded from the turn of the century to 1959, mostly in the earlier part of that. And I'm really interested in what happens to music when it becomes commercialized. And so I sort of muse on what that issue is. And I'm beginning to make comparisons with what has happened in music in Trinidad that I know something about with what happened a little bit earlier, actually, in Cuba. The first thing that struck me when I looked at the research that Diaz had done and looked at Spotswood's discography is that and then I looked at some references concerning the history of Cuba, is that basically the music that we hear on commercial record is relatively new. It's a new form of music, and it relates to certain social, political, economic, and demographic events that occurred in Cuba, mostly in the 1800s and some in the 1700s. And these included a large immigration of Haitian Creoles, that is to say French Haitians and their slaves, to eastern Cuba. It includes the rise of Cuban sugar industry in the middle 1800s, in these huge, huge latifundia of sugar plantations. And it's under those conditions that great numbers of people from West Africa were brought as slaves to Cuba. It also includes a very, very large, a huge, massive Spanish, working class and poor Spanish immigration to Cuba in the late 1800s and early 1900s. So with that done, I think I'll just play a few records and just make a few little comments here on them. The first one is to Alegua. And This, starting with Alegua, Alegua is the Yoruba god, trickster god, and it's my favorite Yoruba god. And I don't look to the Yoruba religion, that's a West African group of people from Nigeria, humorously. I look at it very seriously, and I think it's one of the great now world religions, because Santeria, the child of Lukumi, is a very widespread religion in New York City. And I don't have any liquid for the libation that I should have at the beginning of this. Normally, in class, I put a little water or scotch, if I can get away with it, on the ground in class, but I can't do that, so you just have to imagine that. And so we'll hear a song recorded by Panart in the early 1950s to Alegua. Okay, the next one, the first one's a sampling of very African-style commercial music. That was recorded on Panart, a commercial Cuban label, in the early 1950s. It's stylized and formalized and concertized. It's not exactly as you would hear in a religious ceremony, but some of the participants in the song are people that participate in Lukumi. That's Mercedes Valdez, Benvenido León, and Facundo Riviero. Now, the second one is Guajiro music. Guajiro are the rural peasant Cubans, mostly Spanish, but also Afro-Spanish. Their tradition goes against the main theme that this music is very new that I am stressing. It goes back hundreds of years, but it's constantly reinvigorated. This song was recorded in 1909, January 31st, and it's Martin Silveria, and it's La Escala de la Vida. Okay, the next one is a danson, and the danson is representative of the Afro-French influences in Cuba. The Slave owners brought with them the Orquesta Típica, which became the Orquesta Francesa in Cuba, and the slaves brought with them the Tumba Francesa. And these two different forms of music sort of related to each other. And in the late 1800s, they were formalized by middle-class mulatto Cubans into the danzón. And this one is by Romeo, who was the most recorded danzonero, I guess you could say, in Cuba. It's Miguel, Los Hombres No Lloran Danzón. The change there at the end in the theme of the danzón. Danzons have several different themes, and they were really kind of a capsulization of the contradance, except the danzón was danced for just a couple, and the contradance was groups of people dancing different dances. And what the creator, Faille, did is he threw all that into one piece. And I've heard that this was poor people's music. I've heard that it was the elite's music. Apparently, it went from the middle class to the elite in terms of the people that really performed and liked the danzón. Now, the next one is the son. This also comes out of eastern Cuba. This is Sexteto Occidente. And it has Maria Teresa Vera on guitar, just a great Cuban guitarist. Okay, that has Ignacio Pinheiro on string bass, and he later went on to form several other groups and became kind of the king of the son. And the Cuban son, Cubans think that, with some justification, that the son is Cuba. That the music of the son, particularly in combining Spanish and African influences, really says a lot about the people of Cuba and what Cuba is all about. And you could go look at the son for hours and sort of analyze it, and it's just gorgeous music, and lyrically, the lyrics in some of the songs say quite a lot as well. Now, the next part, if you have this play sheet, What really interests me is kind of metaphorically looking at the melodic changes between kind of usually the sort of Spanish style melody and then switching into kind of an African style melody that's popular to this day in salsa music, especially the Afro-Cubano version of salsa music. And so I've put together little shortcuts of several different song styles that show that transition. And the first one is another one of these pan arts from the early 1950s with Celia Cruz, the great Cuban-American singer. And this is Babalu Aye. So that's the first melody. Now we go into the second melody. Hold. Okay, now we go into an example from the song, and this is a Trio Matamoros. This group, the Trio Matamoro, probably popularized the trio. People my age know Trio Los Panchos from Mexico, and they started up about the same time, but I think generally Trio Matamoros is the first great world music class Latin trio. So this is one of their first recordings, I believe, El Que Siembra Su Maíz, and it shows this transition. This is a street song, a pregon, and they're asking, where is this vendor mayor? Where's he gone? He's not on the corner. Okay, now we go into the second melody. Okay, the next example is, before I get to the next example, if you're interested in Cuban pregones, you should get Cristobal's book, which is fabulous, and it goes in much detail to many of the pregones or street vendor popularized songs. The next one, you'll recognize this. This is a danzonette. It's a danzon with a vocal portion and with the great Machin joining in on the chorus. Aquellos ojos verdes.
Aquellas ojos verdes de mirada serena llenaron en mi alma eterna sed de amar. Ángelos de caricias, de besos y ternuras, de todas las dulzuras que sabían brindar. Aquellos ojos verdes, serenos como un lago, en cuyas quietas aguas un día me miré. No saben la tristeza que a mi alma dejaron aquellos ojos verdes que ya.
Okay, now see how Romeo makes this into a dance song with the second melody.
Dieron con amor el tema dulce de mi canción. te me acordé de mi canción. Tus ojos me vieron con amor, el tema dulce de mi canción.
Okay, this one's out of context, but it's a great song, so I have to play this song. This is a doo-wop bata rumba from New York City, from the streets of New York, Tokiko y sus rumberos. Here's the doo-wop. Okay, now I have a few little oddities to close up with. This is a bagpipe, a Spanish bagpipe record recorded in Cuba in the 1920s. And this song, according to Diaz, was recorded in Cuba. And in Cuba, apparently at the time, all Spaniards, the people from recent immigrants, that is, from Spain, tended to be called Galatians. So this may be Galatian music, or it may be from the Canary Islands. That's the artistic Galatian group of Havana. Now, hold your ears, and perhaps at will turn this lower when we get to it. This is a cylinder record from 1906. It's really in rotten condition. I apologize profusely, but I just have to play it. This is one of the first known Cuban danzón recordings, Ma Belén, which is a district of Havana, by Trio Ramos.
Danzón Madeleine por el Trío Ramos, su lindo hijo.
I've grown so used to that sound that I have to hear it almost to calm myself down by the scratchy noise. I didn't let it go on to the second theme in it. The last example is an example of art music by Maria Cervantes. And this sort of music, this is vocal and piano, is found all over the New World. These lovely, lovely Creole pieces done by middle-class people with classic, formal musical training. And it's quite different than most of the other music we've played. But there's just so many things to talk about. I just thought I would end with this.
Yo tengo un novio. cuello pollero. No me pasa, se lo viera, que cuando vas por la calle pregona de esta manera van los pollitos, los pichoncitos, los guanajitos y los paticos. Pero mami dice, yo me quiero cantar para descansar, para descansar.
Okay, I didn't get to do Trova. I didn't get to do how the mambo comes out of the danzón and how the cha-cha-cha comes out of the mambo and really great stuff. And the wonderful Benny Moray, almost a rhythm and blues rumbero and mambo man from the 50s, currently my favorite singer. I didn't even get to play Benny Moray. So that's it. Thank you.
I'd like to, let's have some questions for Don. Yes.
How did these recordings, particularly the early ones, come to be made at all? What was the market for them?
I believe the market was middle-class Cubans, pretty much the same as in the United States. That is the early Cylinder records. Cubans bought operas, they bought musicals. The Zarzuela in Cuba was very popular. That's the sort of thing that you first see, and you see more of that kind of music than more of the folk-oriented music. And it seems to have followed the same pattern that Spotswood and others have pointed out with respect to American country music and blues, that when the records didn't seem to be selling very well, they began to sell records to more people. But actually, there are exceptions to that in Cuba, because the danzones from out of the chute, they're recorded in the turn of the century. So I'm pretty sure, though, that it was mostly, recordings were originally mostly for middle-class people in Cuba. Yes.
Have you done any research beyond Cuban music actually recorded in Havana in terms of the expatriate Cuban orchestras who performed in Europe throughout the entire decade of the 1930s, like Oscar Calle, Cira Rimac, and so forth?
I'm aware of those, but I have not done any original research on them, though.
Only Cuban boys.
Yes, I have. Yes, they're quite interesting too. What's also interesting in this to me, which all of these groups illustrate, is all of those groups were recording, not necessarily, especially for Europeans or North Americans. They weren't recording so much for Cubans. In this paper, I tried to deal with recordings that were made, most of them in Cuba, some of them in New York, but mostly for a Cuban audience. And that's a huge issue, though. And I've found out that the nature of the popular culture changes in sometimes very interesting ways when they broaden up their localized sound. And Cuban music is the heart and soul, as far as I'm concerned, of world music today, so it's really had influences.
Just one further comment. As far as I'm aware of, the only Cuban orchestra, expatriate orchestra, that performed in, mostly in Buenos Aires during the World War II period for Argentinian RCA Victor, was the Lecuona Cuban Boys.
Lecuona himself was not a member of the Cuban Boys, was he?
Yes, I'm aware of that. Yeah. It's Armando Guarafiche.
Yes, and Lecuona himself has a terrific background in classical music as well as popular music. And he's, so far as I'm think, which is a really heretical thing to say here, but he beats Gershwin hands down for his classic pieces, not for his popular pieces, not for their apples and oranges when it comes to popularization, but for his classic music. The two of us feel that that Lecuona's the tops.
Is Dave Sanjak here? I'd like to invite you to come on down to the front, and while you're, do you have handouts? No handouts. Okay, are we coordinated down here? Great.
we'd probably better move on, but I hope the discussion about music in Cuba can continue during coffee break, at which time I would like to do the mambo, because learn to do the mambo, since I'll be in La Habana in about 2 months from now. So.